Canto 3, Chapter 21. The Conversation Between Mano and Kardama. Vidura said, O Supreme One, be so good to describe the most esteemed dynasty of Svayambhuva Mano, the procreative activity of which led to all the progeny. Priyavrata, Uttanapada, the two sons of Svayambhuva Mano, ruled the world consisting of the seven continents according to the principles of religion. The daughter of that Mano, named Devahuti, O Brahmin, was the wife of the father of mankind you spoke of as Kardama Muni, O Sinless One. Please tell me, eager as I am, the story about the many offspring that he, who was in fact a great mystic yogi endowed with the eight perfections, begot by her. And how did the worshipful Ruchi, O Brahmin, and Daksha, the son of Brahma, generate their offspring after securing the two daughters of Svayambhuva Manu as their wives? Maitreya said, Lord Brahma told the Supreme Muni Kardama to beget children after he for 10,000 years had practiced penance on the bank of the river the Sarasvati. Absorbed in that connectedness, Kardama, in his yoga, was of devotional service unto him, the Lord, who bestows all mercy upon the surrendered souls. The Supreme Lotus-Eyed Lord, being pleased, then showed him in Satyayuga, through the process of hearing, O Vidura, the absolute truth of his transcendental form. He saw that that body of his was as effulgent and pure as the sun, with a garland of white water lilies and lotuses, and an abundance of slick, blackish-blue locks of hair, a lotus-like face, and dressed in spotless clothes. Adorned with a crown and wearing earrings, he, captivating the heart with his smiling glances, held a conch, a disc, and a mace, and played with a white lily. He saw him in the air, standing with his lotus feet on the shoulders of Garuda, with the famous Kaushtubha jewel on his chest hanging down from his neck. Having achieved his desire, he, whose heart had always been filled with love, jubilantly fell down with his head to the ground, and with folded hands pleased him with prayers. The sage said, O worshipable Lord, now we have attained the complete success of having you, the reservoir of all goodness, before our eyes. It is a sight that is aspired even by yogis who attained the perfection of yoga after gradually elevating through many births. O Lord, you even fulfill the desires of those who, for the purpose of obtaining the trivial pleasures of life that one also finds in hell, have lost their intelligence because of your deluding energy, but do worship your lotus feet that are the boat for crossing over the ocean of mundane existence. Desiring to marry a girl of a likewise disposition, who in one's marriage is as a cow of plenty, I also, with doubtful lusty intentions, approached you, the root and source of everything and desire tree that fulfills all wishes. O original father of all, the conditioned souls in the grip of desire are all bound by the rope of the words of you, the Lord of the living beings. I, following their example, also offer my oblations to you, O light of eternal time. But they who gave up to pursue their animalistic, earthly interests, including the people belonging to them, and who, by discussing your qualities with each other, took shelter under the umbrella of your lotus feet, put, with the help of that intoxicating nectar, an end to their being a servant, a slave of their physical bodies. The wheel of the universe, that with a tremendous speed spins around the axle of your imperishable nature, Brahman, with the three naves of the sun, the moon and the stars, the 12 to 13 spokes of the lunar months, the 360 joints of the days in a demigod year, the 6 rims of the seasons, and the innumerable leaves which are the moments, may be cutting short the lifespan of the universe, but not the lives of the devotees. You, O Supreme Lord, as the one self without a second, are desirous to bring about in yourself, controlling, by your deluding Yogamaya potency, the universes that you by dint of your own prowess create, maintain, and again wind up like a spider does. This material world, with its gross and subtle elements that you manifest for us, O Lord, is not just there because you wish it to be an experience for us. When we, through your causeless mercy, may perceive your Supreme Person splendid with the tulsi of devotion, it is there also to show your mercy for the sake of our ultimate good, the Beatitude. In order to motivate us, by perceiving you, to forsake fruitive, profit-minded activities, you, with your energies, brought about the material worlds. I continuously offer my obeisances to the worshipable lotus feet that shower all benedictions on us small souls. The sage Maitreya said, "Thus sincerely, having been praised, Lord Vishnu," replied Kardama Muni with words sweet as nectar, while he, radiating affection, was standing on the shoulders of Garuda and smilingly looked at him with his expressive eyebrows. The Supreme Lord said, "Knowing your state of mind, I have arranged that for which you have exercised with me as the only one to be worshipped. The exclusive worship of me, as is performed by people like you who fixed their mind fully on me, is never without meaning and purpose, O leader of the people. The son of the father of man, the emperor Swayambhuva Manu, whose righteous actions are well known, lives in Brahmavarta, where he rules over the earth with its seven oceans. He, the saintly king, O scholar, will, the day after tomorrow, come to this place together with his queen Shatarupa, wishing to meet you as an expert in religious matters. He is searching for a husband for his grown-up daughter with black eyes and a character full of good qualities. He will give you her hand in marriage, O master, for you are a suitable candidate. She is the one your heart longed for all these years. She is your princess, O Brahmin, and will soon serve you to your desire. She will, from the seed you sow in her, give birth to 9 daughters, and by those daughters, the sages will beget all their children. When you have carried out my command properly, and are completely purified by giving up the fruits of action for my sake, you will finally attain me. With showing compassion and offering safety to all souls, you will be self-realized and perceive yourself and the universe as residing in me, as also me residing in you. By your semen, I will appear as my own plenary portion, O great sage, and instruct your wife, Devahuti, in the doctrine of the ultimate reality." Maitreya said, "Thus having spoken to him, the Supreme Lord, who could be directly perceived by the senses, departed from Lake Bindu Sarovar, through which the river Sarasvati flows. While he, before his eyes, left by the path of perfection to the spiritual world that is praised by all liberated souls, the sage heard the hymns which form the Samaveda being vibrated by the wings of the Lord's carrier, Garuda. After his departure, Kardama, the greatly powerful sage, stayed on the bank of Lake Bindu, waiting for the things to come. Swayambhuva Manu, mounted together with his wife a gold-plated chariot, placed his daughter on it, and thus travelled all over the earth. O great archer, as the Lord had foretold, he reached the hermitage of the sage on the very day he completed his vows of austerity. That holy auspicious water of the Sarasvati river, flooding the lake, was the nectar frequented by hosts of great sages. It was verily a lake of tears, as it was called after the teardrops that fell down from the Lord's eyes when he was overwhelmed by his extreme compassion for this surrendered soul. The place was holy with clusters of trees and creepers, with the pleasant cries of good-natured animals and birds. Adorned by the beauty of groves of trees, it was rich with fruits and flowers throughout all the seasons. It teemed with the life of flocks of birds, intoxicated bees madly buzzing around, peacocks proudly dancing, and merry cuckoos calling each other. The lake was adorned by Kadamba, Champaka, Ashoka, Karanja, and Bakula flowers, and Asana, Kunda, Mandara, Kutaja trees, and young mango trees, and the pleasant sounds could be heard of Karandava ducks, lavas, swans, ospreys, waterfowls, cranes, chakravaka, and chakora birds. There were also masses of deer, boars, porcupines, gavayas, elephants, baboons, lions, monkeys, mongooses, and musk deer. When the first monarch, with his daughter, entered that eminent place, he saw the sage sitting in his hermitage, offering oblations in the sacred fire. His body shone brilliantly because of his prolonged, terrible penance of yoga, and was not very emaciated, for the Lord had cast his affectionate, sidelong glance upon him and made him listen to his moon-like nectarian words. He was tall with eyes as the petals of a lotus, had matted locks of hair and ragged clothes. Approaching him, he appeared to be soiled like an unpolished gem. The monarch, having approached the cottage, bowed before him, whereupon the sage received him with honor and gave him a welcome befitting a king. After having accepted the respect offered, he then remained seated silently. He was delighted to hear what the sage, thinking of what the Lord had told him, then, in a pleasant tone of voice, said, "I am sure, O Divine Personality, that you tour around in order to protect the virtuous souls and put an end to the life of the wicked ones, for you are the person representing the Lord's protective potency. For the sake of your continuance, you, according to necessity, accept the different forms of the organized respect for the sun, the moon, the fire, the Lord of heaven, the wind, the one chastising, the religion, and of the waters. I offer Lord Vishnu, who is you, my obeisances. If you would not have mounted the chariot of victory that is bedecked with a mass of jewels, and have twanged your bow so frighteningly, threatening all the culprits with your presence, if your leading a huge army of trampling foot soldiers would not have shaken the earth with you roaming the globe like a brilliant sun, then surely all moral codes and obligations of the vocations and age groups as arranged by the Lord, O King, alas, would have been broken by miscreants. When you would rest, unrighteousness would flourish with a lack of control over men who are simply after the money. This world would then be seized by those rogues and come to naught. Nevertheless, I ask you, O hero, what the reason is of your visit, since that is what we, without reservation, will carry out with heart and soul.